Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, do we have any Arnold Schwarzenegger fans out there? Well, this week's story is about Arnold and another dude you probably never heard of. And then I'm going to share an observation I had while stranded for several hours in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. So I think you'll find that interesting. And joining me for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
So do you want the headline for this podcast, Dean?
The headline, yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had a UFO over me this morning.
Oh, wow. That's.
I'm not one of these people that like conspiracy UFOs.
Yeah.
Not that I don't believe in them. I don't think about them. But this morning, you know, I've been doing my quiet time down in my deer stand.
Yeah.
And have been doing that for a while. And there's no power down there. I mean, this is a half mile from my house. There's no power. I don't take a phone. So you should not hear anything mechanical.
Right.
And so this morning I was sitting there reading just like I do. And I thought I could hear a hum of something like mechanical or something that just wasn't natural. Because when you sit down somewhere like that in nature, it's obvious when there's something out of place.
Yeah.
And so I didn't think a whole lot about it. Well, I got out when I was coming down the stairs to leave. I heard something. It sounded like an airplane, like a steady hum, but it was acting like a helicopter. So it didn't sound like a helicopter. You know, a helicopter has that whoo, whoo, whoo,
yeah,
that
right.
percussion that you can kind of feel. And it's overcast this morning, so the clouds are real low. So I couldn't see this, but it was right above me. And it sounded like an airplane, but it was going up and down.
Huh.
Right above me. It wasn't a drone, because you know a drone has kind of got a high-pitched sound. You can tell it's a small thing.
Yeah.
But this was obviously a big thing, because you could kind of feel it like you do with a helicopter. But it sounded like an airplane. It was going up and down, and then it was gone.
Huh. Okay.
Was that a UFO? I have no idea.
I don't know what it was.
But it was weird. It was very weird.
Wow. And you may run into E.T. on your way down to your...
You know, maybe I can point him to Jesus.
Maybe so.
One of my Bible studies.
Everybody needs Jesus.
Even E.T.
That's right. Well, we both had adventures. You also spent some time at Gettysburg, right?
Yeah, that was really cool. I'm not a history buff, but... Upward asked me to be part of Battlefield Leadership. And got to go up to Gettysburg, and it's really cool. One of the board members, Mike Chabarro, who's a board member of Upward Sports, he also does this. He's kind of retired now, and he does this. It's kind of a job, but he loves doing it. He loves history. And so this organization walks you through these battlefields and teaches you leadership kind of through the eyes of generals.
That's really cool.
And I didn't know what to think about it. I mean, I'm not a history buff. I really don't know a lot about the Civil War. I hate to admit that. But the reoccurring theme about this experience was what they call commander's intent. And it's where, as a leader, we have to be able to articulate what the intent of what we're doing is. And that's where we fail so many times. I mean, honestly, we've struggled with this through the years with Upward Running and Run for God. And, you know, we walked like Pickett's Charge, and we saw where kind of the last battle of this Gettysburg took place. And a few things stood out to me. One, wow, the bravery and the spine of both sides.
Yeah.
I mean, Pickett's Charge in particular, because the Confederate Army, 6,000 or so, I don't remember exactly how many, were marching uphill for a mile, taking on enemy fire the whole way.
Wow.
And I mean, people dropping dead on both sides of them, and the resolve of these people to keep charging. I learned a lot about George Meade and Robert E. Lee. And in one instance, Robert E. Lee asked one of his commanders, Ewell, to take a hill. It was called Cemetery Hill. And for a variety of reasons, Robert E. Lee didn't articulate the commander's intent, and so Ewell didn't take it. And it's thought that if that one battle that was like 20 minutes long, if that would have turned out differently, the whole Civil War may have turned out differently.
Wow.
And I don't know, it was really good, but what stuck out to me, kind of to bring this all back to what we do, is that everything was pretty much about commander's intent. You hear that in leadership audiences, you know, of all kind. It's mm-hmm. As a leader, you gotta make what you're doing plain. But you know what's really cool about the faith that we live in? The Bible? That's the commander's intent.
That's true.
And everything just kept coming back to me for that. I feel like that is what sets Christianity apart, is we have a true, living, breathing commander's intent document that is just as relative to today as it was 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And if you took the war plan of the Civil War, it doesn't make sense for today. In war of today, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But that book
still makes sense.
It makes complete sense, and it's completely applicable for what we're doing today as it did and it was in Paul's day.
Wow.
Which is what sets that book apart from any other book.
That brings it home. We say that all the time, but that really brings it home.
It does, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, cool. Yeah, it was a really cool trip. I thank Upward for letting me be part of that. There was several other organizations there, and it was kind of neat to see how they view it.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Cool. Well, I'm going to talk more about where I was here in my Dean's thoughts.
You did some traveling, too.
Yeah. Our post of the week comes from Dean Thompson.
Who's that guy?
Spent the day with a bunch of Upward partners and then found a great place to run just half mile from the church where we met. What a blessing today was. Hmm. And I hate to use my own post, but I wanted to point out something here. You know, a lot of people, when they go and they travel, mm-hmm. they cut back on their running and or walking. But I look at that as an opportunity.
Sure.
To go see some cool stuff. And what I usually do is wherever I'm at, I look, I pull up Google Maps, mm-hmm. and I look and I try to find some places that look like it'd be a cool place to run. And I run towards that direction. And if I find someplace great to run, great. If I don't, that's fine too. But I'm going exploring.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun. And in this case, I found this great place to run. No traffic, mm-hmm. other than bicycles and people walking and other things. But right near the river, I ran by the California Expo area.
Yeah.
There were some places so secluded that I was a little bit worried.
Now, what city were you in?
Sacramento,
that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And I ran by a golf course, and there was just all sorts of different things, scenes that I ran by, and it was so much fun. So whenever you take time and you're traveling, look at that as an opportunity to get out there and see some new things, and you'll find some new things. I can't tell you how many times I've gone out to run. I'll never forget a time down in, I want to say it was Montgomery, Alabama. I went down there. It's back when I was at the college, and I was the interim athletic director, and I was going to a basketball tournament down there. I went for a run one day, and I just went out to run, just mm-hmm. wherever it took me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there was a park. And I went running in this park, and it was beautiful, and mm-hmm. it was really a nice place to run. And I never would have – I just ran by it. It just popped up. And I've done that a number of times. So I guess, long story short, you can find some pretty cool places out there in places you never expect.
Yeah, and to your point, sometimes you just need to let the road take you where you want to go.
Yeah.
And it's not really a cliche – when we were in Gettysburg, the lodge we were staying was just beautiful area. I don't know if I sent you a picture or not, but it's just beautiful. Well, JV was there, the guy that's, you can thank JV. He's a big part of the app that you might be listening to this podcast on, but he was there. And so he went walking with me the first day. And he's like, where are we going? I said, I don't know. We're just take off walking. So we just took off walking these little country roads. And you're usually pretty safe if you go out and back. Hard to get lost that way. But we went by a road, and he said, I wonder if that goes back to the lodge. And I said, I don't know. And I didn't want to go down a pig trail with him with me. So the next morning, I was going to run a little bit. And so I went out, and I turned down this road. And it was one of those things, you get, you know, a quarter of a mile down it, and you're like, man, I hope this goes where I think it's going to go. Because, you know, in your head, you're like, it feels like it's heading back. And it did. But that's one of those instances that a 3 mile run could turn into a 10 mile run if you don't if you don't know where you're. But that's also the exciting part of it.
It is the exciting part of it. And I found more often than not, when you turn down a road and you think this could turn out where I wind up running too many miles, I usually don't run enough. And I usually wind up.
Well, that's what happened with me. Yeah. It was kind of a shortcut back to where I was going.
Yeah. So yeah. That's typical. That's typical.
But let me say one more thing. I think I had this. Yeah, I've got this in my notes. This is something that JV and I were talking about. I think it was JV and I. Yeah, it was. You know how people come when we used to put on the race here in Dalton, the half marathon? I don't know how many comments we got from people talking about the beauty of where this race was.
Yeah.
Right here in my and your back door. And we think, it's just Predator's Mill.
Yeah.
But I go to Gettysburg and I'm walking down those backcountry roads and I think, man, this is so beautiful. That same beauty is right here. That same beauty is everywhere.
That's right.
But sometimes we get so used to it, we don't slow down enough to really take it in. And so it really spoke to me saying, I need to slow down right here in my back. I mean, you and I live in some of the most beautiful country in the world.
Yep.
But if you really think about it, we all live in God's creation. There's beauty. And it's why it contrasts so much when we go to other places. I mean, we can go to downtown New York and think, wow. But the people that live in New York, they're like, it's just New York.
Yeah, that's true.
So open your eyes. Go somewhere a little bit different in your own community, because the beauty that we talk about when we go to other places, it's right out your door.
Yeah, yeah. Try to look at it through fresh eyes.
Sure.
One of the things I noticed about Sacramento that was, if it was here, I would think it was not good. But a lot of the grass and stuff in Sacramento is brown. Yeah. You know, they don't have the rain and stuff that we have here. And so it's a dry, arid place, and which made running so nice. Oh, my gosh. 85 degrees felt like a dream out there. Oh, my goodness. But I would get through and my shirt wouldn't even be just a little damp.
Really?
It was crazy.
You just walk outside here right now and you're soaking wet.
Yeah. But that brownness, if it was around here, we'd go, oh, man, things are bad.
Yeah.
But there, it was just beautiful. It was different.
It's perspective. Yeah. It's all perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, our run of the week comes from Ashley Daly. She posted this on the app. It says, it has been such a nice summer here in Phoenix. It was only 77 degrees for the Arizona Boardwalk Sunrise Series 5K this morning in July. I always love races at the boardwalk because it's so close to home and such a fun environment. Today wasn't about time, just showing up and having fun, and that was definitely achieved. And she has a couple of pictures here. And I was recently watching this video of a professional runner, and they were talking about they were doing cross training, they were doing cycling. Mm-hmm. And the runner and another guy were talking, and they were talking about how hot it was and how they were sweating just standing there. Mm-hmm. And it was just brutally hot out there. And then they said how hot it was. It was 80 degrees. And I was thinking, 80 degrees feels pretty good right about now. And then here's Ashley saying, now she's a drier 77 degrees, admittedly, than these other guys were in. But 77 degrees is really cool for her. And for them, 80 was really hot, and it's 3 degrees different.
Yeah.
It's all this stuff is in our head. So much is in our mind.
Sure.
If we'll just, my air conditioning is out in my house right now.
Ooh, really?
Yes. It was 85 degrees in my house yesterday. And it's not comfortable, but man, it makes me thankful for my air conditioning when it does work. But I thought, this is all relative. Years ago, they didn't have air conditioning in houses. This is what that,
but
the way they lived.
They also knew how to draft a house.
They did too. I mean, and they had higher ceilings.
Moving
and
that air. Difference. Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, we used to go down to Key Largo some years ago, and I'll never forget. If you go to Key Largo and they have a cold spell down there is 70, probably 77 degrees, you'd see people wearing jackets.
Yeah.
Walking around Key Largo, and you're like, what in the world? But yeah, I mean, that's cold to them. So yeah, yesterday I got out and I rucked, and this we talk about humidity and we talk about temperature a lot, but yesterday, a lot of times when I ruck, I'll ruck out on Lake Francis Road.
Mm-hmm.
The main reason being because there's usually a great breeze up and down Lake Francis Road. And so one of the ways you're getting a good breeze, and a lot of times you've even got a breeze on your back if you're going with the wind, because it's usually that strong of a breeze up through there. And so you can walk in 90, 95 degree heat, and it's not that bad. Yesterday, there was no breeze. And it was 95 yesterday afternoon, and I had that 55-pound sack on my back. Dean, I thought it was over when I got about halfway out, because if there's no breeze, there's no breeze and you're on the asphalt and it's just that still air and it was in the wrong time of the day. And so, yeah, it's amazing how the little thing, I mean, 10% in humidity, a 5% breeze, those minor little things can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yesterday I went for a track workout, and during the I was doing 12 times 400 is what I was doing on the track. Mm-hmm. During the first six or so, it was overcast, and I was thinking, this feels great. Yeah. I did it. It was in the morning, so it was fairly cool. But then the sun came out for the second half, and what a difference in the way it felt!
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, it was such a difference.
Yeah,
I was on the track, so and when you're running faster, you're kind of creating your own breeze. So from a breeze standpoint, a breeze is not a big deal when it's a track workout. But yeah, it's amazing the difference between cloud cover and not cloud cover.
Just those little differences.
Yeah. Our trivia question from last week: who is the only woman to win the New York Marathon and the Boston Marathon twice? And you have to go way, way back for this one. And I remember a movie about this lady. And it was kind of it's a cheesy 1981 movie I couldn't find it on. There's no streaming platform that covers it. So it's called My Champion or Retoru Champion. She was Japanese of origin. And anyway, Mickey Gorman is the lady's name. Very interesting story because Mickey was a very small lady. She was 5 feet tall. She weighed 85 pounds before she started running. And she actually started running because she thought it might help her gain weight, which is different.
You just don't hear that.
No, but according to the movie, her future husband was a runner. And she saw him running and she wanted to be involved in his life. And so she started running for that reason as well. But anyway, eventually she became this ultra successful runner, again, winning Boston twice, New York City twice. She was born in occupied China to Japanese parents. And so when she was young, she experienced all sorts of hardship during her childhood, especially during and after World War II. She grew up in Japan's Fukushima prefecture, often walking long distances to and from school, caring for her younger brothers. She moved to the United States at the age of 28. So she had never, she only started running in her mid 30s.
Hmm.
And again, supposedly to gain weight. But her first major competitive event was a 100-mile indoor ultramarathon in 1970, which took her over 21 hours to complete. But then she just kept working on it. She won her first marathon in the Culver City Marathon in 1973 and set a then world record of 2:46. It's hard to believe that was the world record. Just that.
I think the hardest thing for me to believe, I mean, I knew ultra running has always been a thing, but I just don't picture ultra marathon structured events in 1970.
Yeah.
You know, especially an indoor one. I mean,
yeah,
it's, I didn't think it was really an organized thing like that back then.
In the early 80s, when I was running in high school, my coach was involved in those things. Mm-hmm. So I saw him doing those
true.
Things.
Yeah, that's true. He was doing a lot of that back then.
Yeah. So that's why, to me, it didn't seem odd, I guess.
Sure.
But anyway, she won New York City in 76 and 77. She won Boston in 74 and 76. Her personal best was 2:39.11 in New York in 1976. Was then the second fastest woman in history. In 1978, she set a half marathon world record of 1:15.58. Obviously, she was always running against younger people because she was in her 40s by this time.
Well, let's contrast that to today. What is the world record for women in the marathon today?
It's 2:09.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. What a difference.
Big strides since then, yeah.
Yes, yes. So anyway, she's in the National Distance Running Hall of Fame, Roadrunners Club of America Hall of Fame. She's known for her humility, always downplaying the achievements that she did have. Just a good lady. She died in 2015 at the age of 80. And it says her impact as an Asian American woman and later in life athlete remains an inspiration in both the running world and the broader landscape of women's sports. So she was a real trailblazer at that time, in both areas. And that's so Mickey Gorman, if you ever get a chance to see that My Champion movie, you'd appreciate Mickey Gorman. It was, again, the movie was not a great movie and the acting was not very good, but it was a neat story about her. Yeah. So
interesting lady.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
So, Dean, something that we've talked about for a while now, I feel like is coming true. I sent you a text yesterday and said, have we been doing prophecy for a while now? But this is kind of a good segue into your next section. But, you know, we've talked about for some time, you know, the role of AI in training. And I made the comment here a while back that I thought, the next big thing, you know, we've talked about running surfaces. We've talked about super shoes. What's going to be the next big thing that makes big advances in training? I think somehow, some way, it's going to be AI. I still don't know what that's going to look like, but I feel like that's going to be it. Well, I think yesterday was a step in that direction, or at least it seems like, because I think one of my hypotheses about AI is that AI is going to take all of the data, because, I mean, think about how many people wear wearables now.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at statistics yesterday. The wearable industry is a $68 billion industry now in the United States.
Yeah.
So all of this data we're collecting. But we just have data on training right now. We've never been able to connect the link between, say, Garmin and our medical records. And to me, that's a huge link, because we don't know how the training, all we can do is speculate on how the training affects us physiologically now. And it's pretty accurate, because I mean, if you're not feeling good today and you train really hard yesterday, there's some ties there, but it's not, it's still somewhat hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can bring the medical records, if you can have Garmin linked to your medical records, obviously that needs to be a decision that you make.
Right.
I would make it. I don't care.
Yeah.
I think we put medical records on a platform, and I think I know why we do it, and we're not going to get into that. But yesterday I watched a press conference where the current administration is talking about making your digital medical records able to be transferred to whoever the patient wants them to be transferred to. So what I heard, and I haven't researched it deeply, but what I heard is that I could call my doctor and I could say, hey, doc, I need you to send all my medical records to Garmin, or somehow we can connect those two.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's not even calling. Maybe it's like we do with our bank account now. You know, we give our employer our bank account number and they can automatically deposit our check.
Yeah.
Linking those two things up, which has never been possible. It sounds like, from what I heard yesterday, that the administration is really trying to bring medical records into the digital age, making these things possible. And to me, that is a huge step in making all the data we're getting, collecting now, it's going to make us have a very objective evaluation of how that affects us medically. Yeah. How it affects our, I don't even know all the things. You know, how does running really affect blood pressure? You know, tying those things together in one data set and having AI look at it, it's kind of scary on one hand, but it's pretty exciting on the other hand.
I think it's great.
What do you think?
Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but when I brought this up to my wife, she said, I already have that.
Okay.
She claims she can get access to her digital medical records at any time. That she already has it. Now, it may be that there are some groups that do that and some that don't. And what they're trying to do is make it a standard where everybody does it.
Right. But she can't. There's no way. There's no mechanism on Garmin's side.
Correct.
To accept those because it's not widely done.
Right. But now maybe Garmin develops that is what you're
right.
saying.
And that the medical records. Because, I mean, let's be honest. If you go get a floppy disk or a flash drive of your medical records, that's doing you no good on the Garmin. And because it's not completely digital, it's still somewhat, it doesn't work. It doesn't connect up. So yeah, I see what she's saying. I mean, you and I see this with we're doing the Function Health right now. I mean, that is all digitally.
Yeah.
But we can't upload that to Garmin right now.
Right.
It doesn't make
any
sense.
Yeah.
Even though I did, and I didn't come up with this idea. I saw this somewhere. But I took my Function Health results and I uploaded it into one of the AI things.
Yeah.
And I said, tell me what I should do based on these results.
Really?
And it gave me a plan, which is very similar to what Function Health gave me.
Really?
And that was very interesting.
Yeah.
I heard somebody did that. And so I did it. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing. AI, I think if you're, you better embrace it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you don't, then it's going to be embraced by the bad side of things.
Right.
And that's what's going to dominate it.
Yeah.
So we need to dominate it with good things.
Yeah. I mean, just like it's no different than the internet right now, I think. Is the internet used for bad? Of course.
Yeah.
Is it overwhelmingly used for good? Yeah. So it's all behind your intent.
Absolutely. Yeah. Incidentally, we're running thin on stories right now. So if you're listening to this and you've thought about sharing your story, then we need to hear it.
Right
now's a good time.
We had a bunch of people just come through the first wave of 5K challenge through their churches.
That's right.
So, you know, a lot of times we talk about these Couch to Marathon stories. Some of the most impactful stories are the 5K challenge stories. So
Amen.
If you've been through the 5K challenge, we want to hear your story.
Amen. For sure. Well, our story this week comes from Jerry Snyder. You know, we've heard, I don't know, a couple of stories from Jerry. And I like this one. It's called Big Arms, Bigger Heart. Always bear in mind that your own resolution to succeed is more important than any one thing. That's Abraham Lincoln, the 16th President of the United States. In March 1995, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Roland Redman both said, "I'll be back." Chances are you've heard of Arnold, but you may not have heard about Roland. Arnold made his promise in a movie called The Terminator. Roland made his promise from a hospital bed. I met Roland and his family when I joined a group called Team in Training. They raise money for leukemia research and patient aid. As part of this program, athletes are introduced to one of their patients and run a marathon in their honor. Roland told me his hero was Arnold Schwarzenegger. My hometown of Columbus, Ohio is not only home to a great marathon race, but each spring a fitness expo and bodybuilding championship hosted by Arnold. When I tracked down the promoters of the event, they requested a letter detailing Roland's struggle. It would be forwarded to Arnold. Roland's mother wrote, "Dear Arnold, my son Roland is a great fan of yours. He thinks you're the greatest. You don't know it, but you helped him through a difficult time in his young life. He had surgery on December 25th, 1991, and was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He started a high-dose intensive chemotherapy on New Year's Eve. He was the first child at Children's Hospital in Columbus to receive high-dose chemo. He spent the next 6 months in the hospital except for a few home visits. He had all kinds of life-threatening side effects and lots of uncertainty about the outcome. He spent a lot of time in protective isolation with me at his side. He got visits from his daddy, brother, Danny, and sister, Rusty. He watched a lot of movies, and most of them were yours. He always said he was going to come through all of this and be strong like you. He would even do the muscle poses in bed for me and the nurses. There is one incident that everyone still talks about. He had a pair of sunglasses like the ones in Terminator 1 and 2 that you wore. I had to go out of his isolation room and talk to one of his nurses about his lab work. He was lying in bed watching Terminator when I left the room. We were at the nurse's station when his door was opened. He stood there with his sunglasses and said, "I'll be back." We all lost it laughing, but then panicked because the kid had gotten out of bed and moved 3 IV poles with 9 pumps of fluid all by himself. Then there was a period of 2 weeks where we had to call him Uncle Bob because you were called that once in Terminator 2. He used to wear his sunglasses in bed even when it was dark. That's how he lost them, because they accidentally got thrown down into the laundry chute during the night. He was awful upset and cried for days. We would really love to meet you. He said he was going to be like you and fight. He did, and he won. He's now 6 years old and considered cured after 3 years of treatment. Christmas is even more special to all of us now. I would like to thank you for helping us. I have always been a fan of you and your movies. I wish you a lifetime of happiness and success in all that you do. Enjoy your family because they're special. We enjoy and treasure every little thing now. Sincerely, Tammy Redman." In the spring of 1995, Roland Redman met Arnold Schwarzenegger. A picture of them together hangs in the Redman home. All the doctors and nurses who treated Roland did a wonderful job. As a role model, so did Arnold. By imitating Arnold's muscle man behavior in standing up to adversity, Roland proved that what any psychologist will tell you, the most important part of reaching your goal is believing you can. In July 2025, Roland is a happy, healthy family man who works as a corrections officer. His nephew, Caden, is my trainer at Planet Fitness, and I have no idea where Arnold is.
Wow. What a cool story.
That is a great story, isn't it? I can't believe it took him this long to tell us about that story.
Yeah.
I love to hear when celebrities do these kinds of things, because Lord knows we hear so many times about celebrities doing things that are the opposite of this, right? Yeah. And Arnold seems to be one of those guys. Even, you know, it's Arnold's an interesting case because he was governor of California for a while, but he seems to kind of be apolitical most of the time.
Yeah.
And I like the ones that try to stay out of politics.
Sure.
I mean, it's great to hear somebody say something that, you know, I feel like is my side.
You're right.
But I'd rather they just stay out of it altogether.
Yeah.
Because that's not why you watch Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
Well, and to be honest, it's the downfall of a lot of them.
It is.
I mean, it's on both sides. I mean, it's,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate.
But yep.
That's where we're at these days.
One of my favorite quotes is the Michael Jordan quote. When they asked him why he didn't get political, he said, because Republicans buy sneakers too.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great answer.
Sure.
And he stayed that way.
Yeah.
This was pretty cool. The idea that this guy became a police officer, I think, is really cool.
Yeah.
Because think about how much, when you go through something that difficult, you have to be more empathetic to people. And
sure.
And that's what we need in our police officers. And so I think that's a pretty cool part of the
story. You know what would be cool?
The story.
This Roland gentleman, once this podcast out, you need to track him down and send it to him.
Yeah, yeah. That would be cool.
Yeah, because he has no idea we're talking about him right now. No clue.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. I like it. You know, it's one of the things that I've seen from the sicknesses and these things. People go through hard things, and we discount the hard things that they go through.
Sure.
And sometimes we don't even believe that they went through a hard thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why this hit me while I was going through this story, but I remember somebody close to me. You remember when they started talking about sick building syndrome?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sounded like the most ridiculous thing you'd ever heard.
Right.
And I thought that's just moronic. There's no such thing as sick building syndrome. Right. Well, I watched somebody go through something that was essentially that.
Sure.
Now, and we really knew the origin of it and all of that. And I realized at that point in time, discounting what people go through in any way, whether it's something that's as obvious and as obviously legitimate as what Roland went through, or something that we think, oh, that's not a real thing. I know we can't take everybody's word for everything, but
we need to at least give them the benefit of the doubt.
The benefit of the doubt.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Proverbs 23:7 says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. I looked at, there was a different translation that says, for he is like one inwardly calculating. I thought that was a really interesting way to put it, because inwardly calculating can be good or it can be bad. In this scripture, it's talking about it in a bad way, but inwardly calculating can be good too. Because what if the inwardly calculating thing wasn't the idea of thinking bad things, but thinking good things, right? What if the idea was, how can I help so-and-so? How can I do something that is good for the kingdom? And so how our mind and our heart thinks is, it can be good or it can be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what I thought of when I think I've thought this before, so I'm not going to act like it's an original thought, but when I read this verse, as a man thinketh in his heart, so he is, seems like a proverbial way to say whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right. And on the heels of Roland's story here, I think back to, it makes me think of nowadays we struggle between having a victor or a victim mindset.
Yeah.
And it goes right into everything we're talking about. I mean, think about, I had chemo when I was 19, and I remember I don't want to play myself up as something I wasn't. I was young. I was full of myself, and I was probably a bit too arrogant. I think that worked to my benefit when I was going through chemo, but the same, not that we need to be arrogant and full of ourselves, but many times we need to not have the victim mindset, because what I saw when I was 19, and chemo has came a long way since then, but I would sit there for 6 hours with an IV in my arm. And you can ask my family. I mean, if you talked to me back then, I didn't have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the doctor was completely wrong, but I was going as a safeguard. I mean, that's really how I thought.
Yeah.
And so much so that I made them put my IVs on one of those rolly stands because I would go walking outside.
Yeah.
With my chemo. I would work during chemo. And so I had probably a misplaced confidence, a misplaced victor mentality back then. But what I saw at 19 years old is I saw the people who came in with a victim mentality.
Yeah.
And what I saw, and there's no statistics backing this up. I mean, there probably is, but I don't have any for my situation, is the people in that room, because there'd be like 20 of us in this room. What I saw is the people who had a mindset like me, maybe not arrogance, but
yeah,
they were gonna beat this.
Yeah,
they beat it. And the people that it was very victim driven, and I'm not casting any kind of judgment at all. So please hear me. But there were people that didn't think they were going to make it.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
Yeah.
Now, is there any science behind that? I don't know if there is or not. But I know that our mindset and what comes along with that mindset is hope.
Yeah.
And I'm going to beat this. And I just think there's so much to that. All of our situations are not going to be cancer situations or situations like Roland's. But it may be that you're nervous about that job interview.
Yeah.
If you go in with the countenance that I'm not going to get this job, there's a good chance you're not going to get the job.
So true.
And if you go in with the countenance that I'm confident, don't go in with a 19-year-old Mitchell because you're surely not going to get it. But if you go in with the thought that I think I can do this, I feel good about this, The disparity between the two people is stark.
Yeah.
But we live in a society that really plays up this victim card, and society says you deserve to be the victim. Don't listen to that.
Don't buy into it.
And if you are, stop it, because it's dragging you and everybody around you down.
Absolutely. That's so true. The other thing about this idea of what's in your heart, I've talked about this before, but a lot of times people will react in a way. Maybe you react in anger and you lash out at somebody because of anger. And then you go back to them, you feel bad about it. And you think, I'm so sorry, that wasn't me.
Sure.
Well, the truth was it was you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there.
That's stumping your toes.
Yeah. I have said it. I've said that. I've used those words myself. That's not me. But yes, it was me, because that's what came out in a burst, because that's what was in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And to say that's not me is just to deny reality. And so when we react to things in a way that is inappropriate, that is negative, that it's because that's what's in our mind. If everything you see, you look at in some kind of a negative framework, it's because that's what's in your mind.
Sure.
And you can change that.
Right.
That's the good news, is that I am so much better today than I used to be. I don't react to things nearly as violently as I once did. Now, sometimes I can attest
to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes I may still have negative thoughts, but for the most part, it's so much better. So don't.
There's nothing wrong with negative thoughts.
No.
It's what you do in response.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so don't kid yourself, because you can't get better until you realize there's something that needs to get better.
You got
to
own it. Yeah.
Yep. Mark 9:23, if you believe, all things are possible. This is where immediately following this verse, it says that this boy's father said, I believe, help my unbelief. And that sounds crazy. You know, I believe, help my unbelief. But this is what we know of as doubt.
Right.
And I liken it to somebody who says, let's say, you think you can run a 25-minute 5K, but you're not sure, but you think you can. That's kind of what he's saying here from a faith perspective, is I believe but I'm not 100% sure. And that's okay. It is okay to have doubt. It is okay to not be fully there. But God will help us get there.
Sure.
Just like, you know, at some point in time, you're going to run that 5K and you're going to find out whether you're there or not. But that's a different thing. But in our faith journey, if we'll go to him and say, I have these doubts, please help me get rid of these doubts, he'll help you get rid of those doubts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I kind of made some notes on this. I think hope without action is just a wish. But hope with appropriate action becomes belief. And let me explain that. I have some people in my life who, from the surface, you would think they believe just like I believe about Scripture and our journey with Christ. And they fall into the category of, they base a lot of things on works. And I've heard them make the comment, I hope I've done enough to get to heaven. And that is a hope that is void. I, on the other hand, I accepted Christ. I took a step, an action. And so I believe that I will get to heaven. Both of these are good things, but it's where I say sometimes hope with appropriate action becomes belief. And it's the appropriate part. So many times we think, well, if I just do something, that will help this situation. But in the case of your walk with Christ, that is not true. So I'm kind of taking a left turn here because I think a lot of people fall into this category. A lot of people who are in our churches today, a lot of people who are very close to you, they have a hope, but they don't have a belief. Yeah. And that is a very dangerous, eternally deadly difference.
Yeah.
If you've ever used phrases like, I hope I'll get to heaven. Well, people have asked me before, how do you know if you're a Christian? And I say, to me, it's very simple. If I make the statement, or if I ask you the question, do you know that you know that you know that you know? If you died right now, if you went out in your car and you got hit by a truck, going back to the George Williams, do you know that you'll be spending eternity with Jesus Christ in heaven? If there is anything but belief when I ask you that question, if there's hope, if there's consternation, if there's anxiety, you want to roll the tape back and act like you didn't hear that question, that is a very good indication that you are not where you need to be spiritually. Again, this is not me judging. This is me telling you what I experienced because for years I had a hope and I didn't have a belief.
And you need to ask that same question this father asked in this scripture.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. And so I encourage you out there, if you're listening to this podcast and you just heard me ask that question and you're like, man, I wish you wouldn't have said that. Or there was consternation. If there was anything except complete peace, I'm not saying you're not saved. That is not for me to make that statement. But it's a darn good indication that you need to have a long, hard conversation with Christ. Not with your pastor. I mean, that's great. That's
sure,
great.
Sure.
Not with your priest. With you and Christ. And you can do that right now.
That's right.
Right now, bow your head and talk to Christ and say, Jesus, am I on the road to spending eternity with you? And you will know in your gut will tell you, a gut feeling is a very real thing.
Yep.
And if there's consternation in there, that is a battle being fought between a holy God and your sinful nature. When I hear that question, 100% complete peace.
Yep.
If there's anything but that, please get that right now.
Yep.
Please go to upwardrunning.com/peace with God. That's why Billy Graham named that track all those years ago, because that is the determining factor. Peace or consternation? Consternation just means anxiousness.
Yeah.
Get that right today.
Yep. Amen. Romans 12:2. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. I like that. It just kind of is this, if you take each of those separately, rejoice in hope. Again, just like you talked about, hope is not a, we think of hope as an unsure thing. Mm-hmm. But there's another way to look at hope. And that's kind of the opposite of that. And then patient in tribulation, when things are getting tougher, don't panic just because things get tough. That's what patient in tribulation means. It's, mm-hmm. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. When I hear something that I don't like, how am I going to react to it? Am I going to react to it in a calm way, or am I going to react to it in a violent way? Don't panic. And then constant in prayer is, no matter what's going on around you, we should be in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Always, all the time, constantly connected to God. And then you put them all together and you have hope even when things are tough, because we are in constant prayer.
Sure.
And that covers everything right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Hope is simply a pit stop on the way to belief.
Yeah.
When hope puts its overalls and work clothes on, it becomes belief.
That's pretty good.
And I hope that's theologically sound. I just kind of came out right there. So I think you get what I'm saying.
I do.
Yeah. But man, patient in tribulation, that's the phrase that stuck out to me. That's my Achilles heel right there.
For sure.
I think for me and you both.
You and me both, absolutely. But
yeah, the verse is spot on.
That's the Achilles heel for a lot of people,
sure.
I believe. Question, has a role model played a role in your running success? I've talked about Richard Westbrook in the past. We've had him on the podcast, actually. He is definitely the one who played a role in my success. My passion for running was kind of given to me by him. He's run every day for over 50 years. He finished third in the transcontinental race they had back in the 80s. He's run that Ball State 500K race, uncrewed, several times in his 70s. He has been that picture of joy of running for me. And honestly, without him, I'm probably not sitting here right now. If I had never met Richard Westbrook when I was in high school, I probably would not be sitting here, because I don't know that I would have had the passion for running, sure, that I developed without him. And this is so much like our Christian walk, because what did Richard Westbrook do that encouraged me to want to be passionate about running? Nothing special.
He did something.
He did a lot of things.
He didn't say anything.
No. Yeah. And I watched him and I thought how much he loved running was,
sure,
admirable to me. And, you know, again, I can't point to any specific thing, but the old adage, you know, preach the gospel when necessary, use words. That's exactly what he did from a running standpoint, and exactly what we should be doing from a Christian standpoint. And I want to point this out. This is important. Westbrook didn't make it look easy,
mm-hmm,
right? He did not make it look like, oh, this running thing is a really easy thing. It's a comfortable thing. It's a, you know, he made you understand it was hard,
mm-hmm,
and he made it appealing even though it was hard. Our Christian walk is the same way.
Yeah.
It's not easy, and we're doing a disservice to God if we relay to people that the Christian life is easy. It's not. But it's the same thing as running. You know, I could see the joy in Richard Westbrook running a 50-miler at Stone Mountain and just absolutely suffering over the last 5 miles. I could still see the joy in him. And that's where we should be as Christians. And I don't know how, it's how we go through it. Mm-hmm. It's when we go through tough times, what does our countenance look like? Hmm. People can see the struggle, but can they see that we have joy in the struggle? And if they do, that's going to do more than any words you can speak.
I've got a whole list of notes, and I'm just going to throw those in the garbage, because what you said just struck me that let me challenge you on what I think you saw. I'm not going to say what you saw. But going back to our last passage, the difference between hope and belief.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Westbrook believes running is good for him.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't hope it. He doesn't hope it's good for him.
True.
If Richard Westbrook would have hoped that running was good for him and back all those years ago when you were being coached underneath him, that's not attractive.
No.
To talk to somebody who hopes they're going to spend eternity with Jesus, that's not attractive. Somebody that believes it. But Richard Westbrook, he is 100% in that he believes running has made his life better.
Yep.
You don't do it for 50 years every single day if you don't believe that. And that drives his actions. And those actions and that belief is what inspired you. And it was probably what inspired, I don't know how many thousands of people through
many,
the years.
Many others, yep.
Flip that over to our walk with Christ. Are we walking around here like some of those people in that chemo room all those years ago with me?
Mm.
I hope I make it. I hope I'm going to make it to heaven. Are you a person with a belief? You've done what the scriptures say. You've surrendered your life to Christ. We are a victor, not a victim. That is immensely attractive to people. Yeah. And that is what that whole sentiment, which I take issue with, preach the gospel and if necessary, use words.
Yep.
If you have belief, not just hope, and if you are, your belief will drive you to take action. If you are taking the actions that reflect that belief that you have, that will draw other people into the community of Christ. And that is what it's all about. That is what it's all about.
Amen.
We're having church here this morning.
Yeah, we are. Another question. Do you practice visualization of your goals? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a race in October that's coming up that I've already started that mm-hmm. process of visualization for that. I remember this story back. My oldest son, back when he was in high school, he was a cross-country runner. He ran on a very good team. And he was the eighth runner when it came time for region championship. He was on and off varsity. He was the eighth runner, though, going into region. So that meant he was going to run JV. But it also meant he had a potential to win the JV race. Mm-hmm. Well, I had talked to him about visualization over and over again, tried to get him to do it. He never would do it. Well, I didn't want to do it for him. Mm-hmm. But it came down to this region race. I thought, we're going to do this together. So we sat in a room and we visualized that race together, and we visualized him running behind the leaders in that race. And then at 2 miles, just boom, mm-hmm. take off and crush him in that last mile. That race day came around and you could see the more confidence he had at the beginning of that race. And when 2 miles got there, Mitchell, it looked like somebody just shot him out of a cannon.
Yeah.
I mean, he had already made up his mind. He'd already seen it in his mind. And
he had already done it.
He blew everybody away in that last mile. I bet he won by 30 seconds in that last mile. And he ran 18 flat that day, which is a pretty good time for a JV runner. And it was his PR, and it was a special day, all because he took the time to visualize his goals.
You know, it's crazy. Before he visualized it, he hoped he could do it.
Yeah, that's true.
He visualized it. He did what he knew he had to do. And because he visualized it, he had the belief that he could do it. That was the difference. When it came time to overtake that guy, that was the separation between hope and belief.
Yep.
Hope, the statistics of success are far, far less than a belief.
Man. That's a mouthful.
It's all just coming together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Funny how God does this.
The whole thing points the same way. Last one. Do you have a favorite charity race? Well, you know, last week I had Angie here.
Yeah.
It's hard not to have the Hawkins fundraiser as your favorite charity race because that one is so much fun.
You know the thing that's infectious about Angie? What's, she doesn't hope in many things. She believes in a lot of things. And that is infectious. That is what makes her so infectious.
That is 100% true. Yep. Yep. So, yeah. So, I think, I'm not sure if this will come out before the end of the fundraiser, but you may still be able to support Row 12 Ministries, Rebecca McGeorge, and who's been a big supporter of Upward Running for years. Go to Upward or go to Row 12 Ministries and you can support them.
I'm going to do that right now. I've forgotten to do that. I'm glad you said that.
She's done a lot of good down there in Honduras where they are, and hopefully with our help, they can continue to do that, make a big impact for the kingdom. If I had a second race to pick, I love the FCA race up in Chattanooga. It is there to support FCA, and I love FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And, of course, our friend Chad Varga from Front Runner Athletics is the guy who is the race director and has been for many, many years there. And so I like the FCA race.
Yeah, I've got one here local that it's the Levi's Circle 5K that's over in Tunnel Hill every November.
Yeah.
And it's a good friend of mine, Tyson Griffin, who he's a pastor, and him and his wife adopted, and now they raise money to help other people adopt because it's an expensive process. And I know many families that have been able to adopt because of this race. And so it is cool. You sent me some information that we won't get too deep into, but the statistics of people who run a race for competitive reasons versus the cause, it's not what you think.
That's true.
And maybe you'll go into trivia questions next week about that, but it's not what you think.
That's true.
Do you need something to keep you motivated to keep fit both physically and spiritually? Upward Running has what you need to keep you on track for both. Check out upwardrunning.com and join us for pennies a day. I promise you, you will not regret it.
All right, we're back. Let's talk about this from Study Finds. Weak sleep rhythm linked to 83 disease, major study warns. Wow. This comes from Peking University. You think you're sleeping well? Fitness tracker data offers unsettling reality check. This goes back to what we were talking about just a little while ago. For decades, sleep researchers have warned about the dangers of sleeping too much, linking long sleep to heart disease, depression, and early death. But a major study suggests these warnings may be based on a fundamental flaw. People are terrible at knowing how much they actually sleep.
Yeah.
In the largest study of its kind, researchers strapped fitness trackers on nearly 90,000 adults for a week and followed their health for almost 7 years. Among people who claimed to sleep more than 8 hours nightly, nearly 22% were actually getting 6 hours or less according to their wearable devices. These fake long sleepers were driving up disease rates in studies that relied on self-reported sleep, creating false alarms about the dangers of sleeping in. The research published by Health Data shows a striking disconnect between perceived and actual sleep. And this has contaminated all these studies. Sure. For years, we just relied on, well, people said they slept 8 hours or they slept 6 hours or they slept 10 hours, whatever their number was. And we just relied on their self-reported data. Well, now we know the truth because we have a way to measure it. And
well, people go to bed, what they do, and it's not like they were trying to mislead anybody, but they get into bed at 10 o'clock and they wake up at 7 and they say, I got 9 hours.
Right.
Well, I know what I do when I get in the bed. I watch a TV show, I kind of gather my thoughts, but just because you're in the bed doesn't mean you're asleep.
That's right.
And so I actually tried something different last night.
Yeah.
Usually I've got this habit. We set the sleeper timer for 20 minutes of our TV on our TV and I go to sleep. Well, what I've noticed on my sleep data is even though I roll over when I set that sleeper timer, I'll roll over And in my head, I'm going to sleep. But if I look at all this time when I actually went to sleep, it wasn't until the TV actually went off.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So even though I think I'm asleep, that TV is keeping me awake. And so last night, for the first time, it was kind of weird to do it the first time. When we were done watching TV, I turned it off. And yeah. I haven't looked at it today, but I'm curious to see over the next week or so if that tracks.
Yeah.
Because again, just like this study says, I really thought I was going to sleep when I set that sleeper timer and rolled it over. But not the so data much. Says different.
Huh. Well, that's kind of the whole point of this article. The study linked various sleep problems to 172 different diseases across virtually every system in the human body. Some diseases show dramatic associations. For example, people with the most disrupted sleep rhythms faced more than triple the risk of age-related physical debility and over double the risk of gangrene compared to those with robust sleep patterns. 37% of Parkinson's disease risk could be attributed to disrupted sleep patterns. 36% of type 2 diabetes risk. 22% of acute kidney failure. For 92 diseases, more than 20% of the risk could be traced back to sleep problems. God, this is so impactful.
Okay.
And it says here, sleep rhythm matters more than sleep duration. That's where we get it wrong. We have always talked about sleep duration and compared that to disease rates and things like that. But this is saying it's not just about how long you sleep. It's about the quality of the sleep that you're getting. And the quality of the sleep that you're getting is more important, not equally important, more important than the amount of time you sleep. You're far better off getting 7 hours of really good sleep than you are of getting 8 hours of bad sleep.
And consistency. Now, let me pause you for just a second. I don't mean to cut you off. I mean, I have my computer right here. So I pulled up my sleep tracker last night.
Yeah.
I purposely turned the TV off at 10 p.m. on the dot. 10:07, I was asleep.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. I mean, this is real time stuff we're doing right here. It is. It's amazing that we talk about the room needs to be dark and all that. And even though I set the sleeper timer, if I'd have set the sleeper timer right last night, I would have went to sleep at 10:27.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Wow. That is good. Research also found biological pathways that might explain these connections. Inflammatory markers included white blood cells, eosinophils, and C-reactive protein appeared to mediate the relationship between disrupted sleep and disease risk. Poor sleep may trigger systemic inflammation, which then contributes to various health problems.
Everything. Inflammation contributes to everything.
That's right. So anyway, it goes on to talk about the comprehensive methodology they used in this, which this is a really, really good quality study, it looks like. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is that after decades of warnings about sleeping too much, it turns out the real problem may be that we don't know how much we're actually sleeping at all. The disconnect between perceived and actual sleep may be as significant for health research as the diseases that poor sleep appears to cause, fundamentally questioning whether people can accurately judge one of their most basic biological functions. Hmm. This goes along, and this is about sleep. This probably goes along with a lot of things where we think one thing, the facts are something different.
Right.
And
what's bringing us to those conclusions? All this new data that we're gathering.
Yep.
Because used to, think about it. If you were an insomniac 20 years ago, you had to go to a facility and get a sleep test done in a bed that is not your bed and conditions that are less than ideal with all these things hooked up to you. And so even those tests weren't accurate.
Yep.
Today, we wear a watch and we get far better data than all of those things done in the past. And
that is so true.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually just listened to a podcast yesterday. It's funny how you and I are on this sleep kick right now, but it was... I don't endorse Rich Roll. He's got some language sometimes, but I listened to a podcast. I meant to send it to you, but it's, you know, a lot of these podcasts that we listen to, it's like they go deep. and they get way over my head sometimes. Yeah. But he has a podcast out right now where he took a compilation of like five different guests that were all on his show talking about sleep.
Really?
And he took kind of the most understandable parts of every one of those and made a podcast. And it's really, I'll send it to you when we get done if you
remind me.
But it's, I mean, this is something that we often don't think a lot about, but it's, you listen to some of these people and they say it's the number one thing to better health. It's just getting better sleep.
Yep.
But we focus on all these, how many grams of whatever I'm getting, get better sleep.
Yeah, yeah. I thought one of the most interesting things about this study was that it talks about how poor sleep leads to inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, inflammation leads to poor sleep.
Yeah.
And that's just a snowball, right?
And it leads to a lot of other things.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so trying to figure out a way to get better sleep will lead to less inflammation, which will lead to better sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the journey that I'm on right now. I'm not doing nearly as well as you are sleep-wise.
Well, but what you also see, and I have seen this because we've been kind of tracking it for a while now, is like this past week, I was in Gettysburg. I just don't sleep good when I'm not in my own bed. You know, I wasn't eating as good. And so my sleep score started taking a nosedive. Well, when I got back here, I got back on my routine, but it doesn't fix itself the first night.
Yeah.
It has taken several nights for my sleep scores to climb back up. And it's because of what you just said. One perpetuates the other. And for you to get back into that cycle, it takes a little time. So if you're going to dive off into this journey of tracking your sleep, just know as you make changes, those benefits don't reflect themselves the next night.
Yeah.
There's a cycle there and you have to get into that cycle. Circadian rhythm is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can start to change that, but it doesn't happen overnight.
Yep.
So be patient.
Well, anecdotally, I can say this about the whole sleep thing. I am way more consistent about the time that I go to bed and the time that I wake up every day than I ever have been in my entire life, probably over the last 10 or so years. I have been sick less over those 10 years than at any time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely get sick.
Right.
You know, we're doing this function health thing right now. My white blood cell count is low, but I don't get sick.
Right.
So my body doesn't have the ability to fight it, probably because it doesn't need it.
Sure.
And I think it all goes back to sleep. It's the only thing that's different.
Yeah.
Sleep, maybe you could maybe say a little less stress, but even that I don't think is.
You kind of went quasi-vegan in that time frame too.
So I did. That may have something
to
do with it.
Not the vegan part necessarily as much as you just started watching your diet.
Yes.
And so have I. And so that's. Yep.
Makes
all
difference.
These, there's so many pieces, but it's like they all, the S&P is an index fund.
Yeah.
I think sleep is an index of everything you're doing.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Like it. Well, it's time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, I had an observation while sitting and walking through the airport. And this one is called Observing and Dreaming. I'm sitting in an airport as I write this observation. It's a fairly quiet corner at the end of a terminal at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, but this is an unusual spot in this facility. My gate assignment changed 3 times, so I spent a lot of time and a lot of steps checking out much of the complex of buildings. I had to wade through thousands of people to get to this fairly quiet spot. So many travelers. It makes me wishful and sad. Wishful because I'd love to see many of these people signed up for a 5K challenge or maybe a couch to marathon challenge. Sad because the statistics tell us that most of these people get no real exercise. What if people were as eager to be fit as they are to travel? It would change the world. I couldn't help but notice that the people I passed looked just like the people I see at a local 5K. The difference is that those people have decided to work on becoming healthier. Of course, many of those people who I walked by were on some sort of fitness journey, but the statistics tell us that most of them were not. The statistics tell us that somewhere between 20 to 25% of people in the U.S. are regular church attenders. It goes up to around 40% if you include online viewing as attendance. Similarly, somewhere just north of 40% of people meet loose aerobic exercise guidelines, though only 24% meet both aerobic and strength guidelines. When you're in a crowd of people, look around you, as I'm doing now, and 3 out of every 4 people probably need a better fitness routine. In addition, 3 of every 4 people may need a closer relationship with Jesus, or any relationship for that matter. It sounds a little depressing, doesn't it? Well, maybe not. Let's look at the positive side of this dire situation. All of these statistics tell us that we have the potential to encourage more than 75% of the people around us to either be more fit or to find hope in Jesus. There is no single study that tells us how many people fall into both categories, but most tell us that the Christian community is typically similar to society on most issues. Another sad reality that we'll have to leave to the side for now. In that case, only 25% of 25% would be Christian and fit. That means only about 1 person in every 16 or 17 that you meet will be a fit Christian. That also means we have something to share with nearly every person we meet. We know that Jesus gave us the Great Commission in Matthew 28, 18 through 20. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Wherever you go, look around at the mission field. Be kind and encourage those around you by sounding like you just won the lottery. If we can share that kind of excitement, they will wonder what's behind all that joy. And maybe, just maybe, you will get an opportunity to tell them.
What a great story, Dean.
You can't help but look around when you see so many people. Mm-hmm. And you think about those people and who they are and what they believe and what they do. And you know the numbers. Mm-hmm. And you realize that so many of those people could live a much better life, mm-hmm. meaning healthier or closer to Jesus, if they just would do it. And you can't help but worry about people. I met a guy on the airplane on the way out to California. I just happened to notice, I was sitting in the middle seat of a 3-seat bank there. And I just happened to catch him. I wasn't trying to look at what he was doing, but I just happened to catch him scrolling through his phone. And I saw he was looking at a page of a marathon. Hmm. And I thought, oh, he must be a runner. So I asked him, you know, I couldn't help but notice you were looking at something that had something to do with a marathon. I said, "Are you a runner?" And he was going that weekend to San Francisco to run the whatever the marathon is they have there in San Francisco. I can't remember the name of it right now. But anyway, he was going to run that marathon on Sunday. And I was able just, I didn't really talk to him about his faith. I didn't really talk to him in depth about running or anything like that. But I was able to share with him that I was going to pray for him to have a good race. I asked him about his goals and things like that. And I said, you know, I'll be praying. And I wanted to make sure I checked in after the race. He ran 3:33 for the race, which was a little off of his goal, but not too far. There were some brutal hills in that race.
Yeah.
But he had a pretty good race. And I was able to go back and encourage him.
Sure.
With that. Now, I don't know. His name was Blake Wilkinson. Wilkerson. Seemed like a nice guy. I don't know anything else about him.
Yeah.
But I know that he may or may not be a believer and that he got a chance to know that I'm praying for him.
Sure.
And sometimes it's just that simple.
Yeah.
To share with people.
We complicate it too much.
Yeah, we make it out to be like you've got to go into this theological discussion with people, and it's not true.
You know, we're having a conversation about Upward Running right now, and, you know, we finally got the app is done. It's working great, and so we're kind of heading into the season where, you know, a lot of our growth has historically come between October and January. And so we're talking about, you know, ways of reaching people and encouraging people, and kind of my guiding light that we've been talking about here recently is, and it goes hand in hand with the gospel, is we got to keep it simple. There's a lot of platforms out there that, and I'm not saying they're complicating things, but they're complicated. I mean, and it's for the more advanced, high octane, you know, they want to get down into the weeds, which is probably where you and I like to do. But Upper Running, we're fairly simple. It's mm-hmm. it's not complicated. But I feel like for our audience, that is what they want. They want a proven plan to get them from the couch to a 5K or the couch to a marathon. But what separates us is that tie-in to your walk with Christ. And mm-hmm. I don't know. It's funny that we've kind of been talking about this lately. And every opportunity we get, that's kind of our guiding light, is that has to be the constant with us, is it's got to tie in. Whether we're talking about, you know, your dean's thoughts, or whether we're talking about the story, running is a little bit, and our walk with Christ is a lot. And that's just always been our guiding light. And I really do think that's what separates us from other platforms. I mean, you heard me say the wearable platform out there is a $68 billion industry. I have no desire to compete with that.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I'll never forget, when we talk about sharing Christ with people, it seems to be an intimidating thing to do. It's hard to do. I will never, ever in my life forget the video that Penn Jillette made several years ago.
I was just thinking about that.
Such an impactful video, because if you don't know, Penn Jillette is an atheist. Mm-hmm. And he made this 5-minute video where he talks about how this man who came to him with a Bible. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, he appreciated that man. Even though he's still an atheist, he appreciated that somebody put into action what they say they believe. Mm-hmm. Because he made the comment that how much do you have to hate him
sure.
to believe that there is a way to eternal life and you're not going to share it with somebody?
Right.
And when you hear that, when you hear an atheist especially say that, how impactful that was to me when I think I'm just walking by people every day who don't believe and I'm not sharing with them. And I shared a couple of weeks ago about the friend of mine who brought a Bible to Ozzy Osbourne. Mm-hmm. You know, that was...
Yeah.
I don't know what the ultimate outcome of all of that was, but he was living his faith, mm-hmm. and we've got to live our faith. We've got to share.
And Dean, it's not that I don't want to give us an excuse here, because I'm going to slap us upside the head on the backside of this, but it's not that we intentionally say, oh, I want that person to go to hell.
Right.
That's not what we do. We simply become less and less intentional.
Mm.
And, I mean, we struggle with that in this ministry, if I'm going to be honest. We have to consciously bring ourselves back to the center sometimes. Because we get excited about training plans and this new technology and these wearables and sleep. And, I mean, we talk about all kinds of cool things. And it excites us. But sometimes we tend to drift. And this is kind of where I want to ask everybody listening, hold us accountable.
Yeah.
Because our goal here is to reach people with the gospel of Jesus through the sport of running. That's the mission statement of Upward Sports, reaching people with the gospel through sport. Ours specifically is through running. And so, yes, we're going to talk about all kind of fun and cool things. But if we ever get to the point to where we're not tying all this up in a bow and bringing it back to Christ, let us know.
Yeah.
Because that can happen without it's to share Christ is an intentional thing.
Yep.
To not share Christ is not always it's most often not intentional. It's just you drift. That's our nature. Our sinful nature is to drift away. So hold us accountable.
Amen.
You know, my hope is if we ever go through this podcast and we're not talking about Jesus, we need to hear from you.
Amen. Have you always wanted to read through the entire Bible but never found the time to do it? Well, let me do it for you. Sign up for the self-paced Bible in a Year challenge and start listening today. Every day, I read a few chapters from the Bible and give you helpful tips and encouraging quotes. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for? Every week, I share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. We talked about age for the last 2 weeks, so let's keep it going. Age groups become less crowded as we get older. Think about
let's
that.
Let's don't talk about why that happens. But.
Yeah. Well, people become less active as they get older. There are a lot of people in the 40 to 50 age group.
Yeah.
I mean, that may be the number one age group as far as participation. Is, yeah. Then when you get to the 50s, starts to calm down. That number gets to diminish. When you get past 60, the number diminishes a lot more. And then by the time you get to 70, there's very few people out there that are doing it. So, you know, you think about these people who do these great things in these races. I'm thinking about, Bill Silvers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I saw that. Yeah.
Bill Silvers gets out there and he competes at his age. And you know, he has some people to compete against.
Sure.
But it's a lot less than it is when you're 40.
Yeah.
So that's something to be, you know, just the fact you're out there is enough.
How old is Bill again?
I want to say 80, early 80s, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a little older than George, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so there's another reason.
Yeah. I mean, what an example.
Yeah.
He is. Yep. George, you know, all some of these older guys, it's just.
Yep.
You know, it's impressive to look at a 20-something and watch them bust out a 15-minute 5K. It is equally as impressive to watch George and Bill and some of these on the opposite end of the spectrum. And it's definitely more inspiring.
Absolutely.
To see that. So kudos to you, Bill, George, everybody out there that's in these older age groups. I mean, you're an inspiration to me and everybody around, more so than the guys winning the race.
Amen. Yeah, one of the biggest compliments I ever got was running in a race one day when I was just dying. I was feeling it was a terrible day, maybe the worst race I've had. And some guy pulled up alongside of me as he was passing me, telling me I was an inspiration because I could run as well as I could at my age.
You're the old man.
yeah. But he was a young guy.
Yeah.
And I knew what he meant. He was being kind is what he was doing.
Yeah.
If you say it out loud, it sounds like he's being condescending or something. He wasn't. He was being a super nice guy.
Yeah.
And it's one of the best compliments I've ever had.
Well, you know, this is the unique thing about the sport of triathlon. In triathlon, for whatever reason, they put your race number on each bicep on your arm. And then on your calf, they write your age. And that always puzzled me for a long time when I got into the sport. Like, why? What is the purpose of that? The number on your arm is so people in the swim, judges, they can see your number when you're swimming. What purpose does the number on your calf have? It has no purpose.
It does have a purpose.
What?
So you know what age group that guy in front of you is in.
That's my point.
Yeah.
There is no purpose from a race director standpoint. The only purpose, because I'll never forget my very first race, as a Chattanooga Waterfront Triathlon, I mean, I'm burying myself out on Highway 27 going up those big, long hills. And I will never forget. I was probably late 30s.
I know where this is going.
And a lady in her 50s come cruising by me like I was sitting still. And so I say they put the number on the back of your calves so the young guys can be demoralized as they get shattered by the older age groups just flying by them.
So, you know,
we should start putting ages on the back of runners' calves.
Well, do you know what, for the USATF stuff, all the Masters championships,
yeah.
they put your age on your back.
Do they really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. They you have two numbers. You have a number for your front and a number for your back. The number on the back is just your age.
Yeah.
And so that when you're trying to run, you're running behind somebody, you know if that person just passed you is your age group or not. And you know if that person ahead of you that you're chasing is your age group.
I never reeled that lady back in.
No.
She just drifted off into the distance out in front of me. So it's very humbling.
Good stuff.
As a cocky 30-something, you're like, I can beat everybody out here. And nope.
Well, we've got the U.S. Championships coming up this weekend because we have the World Championships this year in September. So if you're not a track fan.
Is that in Oregon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the World Championships?
Yeah.
No, the World Championships. Ah, gosh, I can't remember where they are now. You caught me off guard there. The National Championships that are this weekend are in Oregon.
Okay.
The World Championships are not. But I may do an extra podcast or two about the National and World Championships when it comes up, just for the fun of it. But I won't have Co with me. I called Co to see if he could do an extra podcast or two, and Co's actually really busy right now.
Really?
Yeah. They're having some layoffs where he's working and having to do more than one job. And so he's buried right now. So yeah. I hated that because I always enjoy talking with him about that. But anyway, let's talk about, so this is something that I thought, an observation I had this weekend that I think is different about running than a lot of other sports. Yeah. Well, you remember the Braves back in 1990 when the Braves were the worst team in baseball, had literally have the worst record in the National League, and then the next year they were in the World Series.
So it would have been like 95, 96.
No, the first time they were in the World Series, 91.
Oh okay.
It was 91. Yeah. And the team they played against were also a worst to first team as well from the American League.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, the Braves didn't win that World Series, but they were in the World Series. You realize that's what we're going through right now in the United States as it relates to like the 1,500 meters and the 800 meters. We have the best crop of 1,500 meter runners in the world right now, taken as a whole. And 3 years ago, we were nobody.
I'm shaking my head like, yeah, I know all this, but no, I have no idea.
But
this is why you're great to have on this podcast, because you're a wealth of knowledge here, Dean.
This is like having a football team.
Yeah.
That's your favorite football team who didn't even make the playoffs 1 year, and then the next year they're getting to the Super Bowl. You know, that's the impact. And it can happen so quickly in track and field, and I just think that's a cool thing.
You know, if Co can't do it, you know what you should do?
What's that?
Because these haven't started yet, right?
Right.
You should call Lane and Patton.
Yeah.
And tell them, hey, I want you to watch the World Championships. Because both of them are kind of not in that scene very much right now. Challenge them. Say, hey, I want you to watch the championships and come on the podcast and let's talk about it. Because especially Patton. He's close to Co when it comes to geeking out on running stuff.
Yeah.
They would probably enjoy that.
They probably would. That would be fun.
Just a thought.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Well, one last thing. So Claire and Travis talked about Courtney Dewalter in their podcast.
Yeah.
And Courtney is arguably the best ultra runner in the world. But she doesn't go by a running plan.
Yeah.
And I thought, I kind of like that.
That's awesome.
I'm sure that she has some kind of a way that she goes about her training, but she doesn't have a specific running plan. The foods that she eats are not the typical foods. She wears these baggy shorts that are different from everybody. She does everything different from everybody else. Now, obviously, it works for her. And the only reason I wanted to bring this up, not to talk about Courtney or anything specific about her. But my point is, try stuff.
Yeah.
Don't just do the normal stuff that everybody else is doing. Obviously, Courtney decided to try things that are non-standard, and it works for her.
Don't you think that, I don't know this, but I would think it, isn't the idea of not having a structured training plan more common in the ultra world?
I'd say so.
Because, I mean, they're just, a lot of their plan is just miles.
Yeah.
I mean, really, yeah. If you think about it. So, but yeah, that's,
yeah,
that's interesting.
I'd say that's probably true. But I've always been, I don't go by, I don't have a plan.
Yeah.
I'll decide from week to week what I'm doing. Sure. Now, I do have an overall in my mind what I want to do. I know how far it is
to
a
plan in your head.
But yeah, but I don't have a specific plan written down where I'm following from day to day.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And I mean, ultra runners, by and large, it's a different breed.
It is. That
from
is
road
true.
Runners.
That is true.
It's kind of like triathletes versus cyclists. You would think it's the same type of people.
Nope.
No, completely different group of people.
That is for sure. So anyway, try new things. You might try a new thing and you might have a miserable run after it, but that's okay. You know, that doesn't work. Check that off. Move on to something else.
And if you heard Dean just now mention another podcast, go check out the Kinda Fast podcast. You can go to our YouTube page or go find it on wherever you listen to. So this is Travis Vaughn and Claire Boyce, who are also on the Upward Running team. And they have a very different take on a podcast than we do. So go check them out.
Yeah, check it out. It's a good one. Our trivia question for this week. Dean Karnazes, an ultra runner. Mm-hmm. I figured since we were talking about an ultra runner, we'll have
different breed.
Different breed.
Very different.
Definitely. Dean Karnazes has run marathons in all 50 states, like many others have done. But what made his 50 marathons in 50 states even more impressive than anyone else's?
Oh, that's the trivia question.
Yes.
I was like, I know that.
If you know the answer to that, you can send that to dean@upward.org. And if you're the first member to send that to me, then you will win $20 off in the store.
We should follow back up with Dean. We've had him on the podcast.
We should.
We should reach back out to him and see if he wants to do a follow-up interview.
Yeah.
He's an interesting guy, for
he
sure.
He really is an interesting guy.
He thinks about things very differently than most people.
You know, he lives what he believes.
Oh,
you know, he's another.
Sure.
We were talking about Richard Westbrook a little while ago, and that guy just...
I don't know if he does now, but for forever, he didn't have a car.
No.
He lived in San Francisco, and he ran to meetings, ran to work, ran to this.
Yep.
And he was truly a nomad living in a urban city.
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely an interesting guy. Puts his money where his mouth is, that's for sure.
Sure.
Our motivational thought of the year, our motivational thought of the week, the faster you run, the faster you're done. That comes from Dimity McDowell, who is a runner and an author. And I like this one because there's times when this is an appropriate thought while we're out running. Just the thought of, oh, I feel so miserable today, but the faster I run, the faster I'm done. I think you can't do this too often because you don't want to run too fast and push yourself too hard too often. But every once in a while, this is a great thought to have.
Sure.
This can also be used to infer a different thing, too. The faster you start your run, the faster you get through. So not just the faster you run during your run, but if you're putting off running, think about that. The faster I get started, the faster I'm done.
Yep.
And that's a big help, too, I think, sometimes. Yep. And I like to use this psychology when I'm in a race. Like if I'm in a 5K, I get halfway through and I'm thinking, okay, it's just 8 or 9 more minutes to go. Surely I can hurt myself for 8 or 9 more minutes and I can withstand anything for 8 or 9
more.
You
know, that just made a lot of people sick when you said
that. Sorry. Sorry. I didn't.
That's one more mile to go for me.
Yeah. Well, it's a... but I think it's a good way to...
No, I get it, yeah.
Good way to think about
it. It's all perception. Everything we talk about so many times is just how you look at life.
It is. All right, if you're out there and you haven't joined the Upward Running Run Club, you should have done that by now, if you haven't.
Lots of cool things. The app is just killer now. The social is really building. It's people are starting to migrate over from the Facebook group, which is eventually where everybody's going to be. Lots of chatter going on there now, lots of enhancements going on every day. If you're thinking about the 5K challenge, many people out there have just questioned us for several years where the guided workouts went. You know, the 5K challenge we used to have to where it was guided. Well, that's coming back very shortly.
Yeah.
So it is in the last phases of being developed right now. So stay tuned for that. Lots of cool things coming up.
Yep.
So if you've ever thought about coaching, we don't say this a lot. If you're out there and you're a Christian and you're a runner, guess what you also are? Prime to be a coach in your community. So check that out. You can go to upwardrunning.com and click on learn how to become a coach in your community. It's very simple. Well, actually, if you're a coach, we give you a free membership. So there's that.
Yeah.
So go check it out.
Absolutely. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.